Welcome to Coaching Uncaged, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of the coaching profession with cutting-edge practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Coaching Uncaged brings you pioneering thinking to enrich the art and science of coaching in all its forms. And now, introducing your host, Robert Stevenson.
Hey, Nicola, it's great to have you on the Animus podcast and to see you again.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. We were just saying it's been a few years.
I think it's like 8 years ago was when you were in the Animus training room. Is that about right?
Yep, sounds about right.
I had this memory of you when we were exploring, I think it was transactional analysis. Well, it was transactional analysis. And we were talking about winners, banals, and losers. And we were having this conversation about, if you're not quite sure who you are in that kind of scenario, how do you get into that kind of winning mindset?
And I can't remember that conversation. Premature senior moment, I don't know. Yeah.
And that's okay. And it just kind of just made me think about your journey of someone going, can I do this? What might I do with this to where you are now? So if you can share maybe a little bit of your journey with us, that would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, just coming back to this winner banal thing, hearing it is, I guess that was the starting point of the journey I'm on now, is asking yourself that question, well, what does winning at this coaching thing look like? What does it mean? What do I want it to mean? All those big questions.
Yeah, nice existential stuff.
Yeah, I had no idea back then. As far as I could get my head around, I wanted to qualify, study in coaching. I wanted to become a qualified coach. I'd found the most amazing provider. That was, I mean, anybody who is thinking about embarking on a coaching journey, that's a massively important start to the journey, is finding the right place to train. So that was a tick in the box. But then after that, it's okay, so I'm learning all this amazing stuff, these skills, developing my coaching toolbox. What am I really going to do with it? And if that's from a winning mindset, what does winning look like?
Yeah. And so what was it that drew you to coaching in the first place?
Well, I don't know if I've ever shared this with you. So do you remember, so this is 8 years ago and things have changed. So 8 years ago, do you remember you were leading on a youth coaching program?
Yeah.
So when I initially signed up to Animus, let's rewind. I had been through some experiences with teenage children, my own and other teenage children who were in my life. And it was a really challenging time. And I remember after a few years going, I can't be the only parent that's going through this. And we got to this really great place. And I thought, I'd love to be able to help other parents, mums in particular, who are going through that. So I always had this desire to help other mums. And I thought it was helping them with their teenagers.
Okay.
So, right, let's become a youth coach. I sought out youth coaching.
Okay.
Which is quite far from what I'm doing now. I'm still around mums.
Yeah.
So I found Animus, and then by the time it was just transitioning. So as I was coming on to train with Animus, it changed structure, and then it became the core program for everybody the same, and then you could specialize.
Yeah.
So I did that core Animus qualification, and by the time I got to the end of that, it was time to think about my specializations, I'd realized, actually, I probably don't want to be working with like hundreds of really difficult teenagers. I'm kind of done there, and I'd started doing more soul searching around, okay, what does light me up? You know, what am I really passionate about? And it was still in the mum arena. And I thought, well, if I can help the mum, who's often the rock and the glue, by default, if she's in a great place, she'll be in a better place to make those differences. So.
Wow, I'd forgotten that we were doing that at Animus at that time, that we had a youth program that was going to be like 5 modules long, a bit like the diploma is now. And then we shifted and changed that. Wow, so that was then. And I also remember that when you were coming into London to do your training, you were sort of making the most of those moments by also running events over your training weekends.
So I was living in Eastbourne at the time, and to get the train from Eastbourne to London, it's not far in distance, it's like almost 2 hours. So whenever I had a weekend away to come and do the Animas training, it's like, okay, how can I maximize this opportunity apart from seeing amazing people and peers? So I'd already got clear on, towards the end of my training, I was clear that I wanted to be working with mums in business and supporting them as a business coach and mentor. So starting to organize these events to meet them, you know, network, connect, spend time together. And that was 8 years ago, 7, 8 years ago when I was organizing those events. And I was reflecting on this, actually, how things evolve and change. So you commented, you'd seen a video I posted.
A video of one of your award ceremonies, yeah.
Yeah, so we just had the most recent film done of the Empower National Business Awards, which is a national event that we're going into our third year.
Wow.
And really proud of that film. It captures the energy. It's a sellout event. But when I look back and think, well, where did this all start? I was organizing these free get-togethers. So I thought, wow, I'll fill all those places. It's free. Of course people will want to come. And I would sit there and often have no shows, or one lady would turn up. Chris, if you ever watch this interview, thank you for being my one lady who stayed with me all night and even drove me back to my hotel. I thought you were feeling quite sorry for me. And it would have been so easy to have given up at that stage and go, oh, you know what, live events are not for me. This is not going to work. I'm going to go. Nobody's coming.
So what enabled you to keep going?
Well, in the early days, so when I did some events down south, my mum was a big factor because I'd bring her along with me. So when nobody came, we could sit and have a nice glass of wine together.
Lovely.
So that was a good motivator. And then I think I was lucky in that, having been in business, and I am a marketing strategist, even if your ego takes a bit of a hit in that moment, you think, oh, you know, this isn't going to work. It's having that understanding that actually marketing is quite an art form, and getting yourself out there takes a bit of time, and there's a cycle to everything. So I often use the analogy of the farmer, you know, goes out to the field and is plowing and sowing those seeds. He doesn't turn up every day going, what? There's no harvest. What's going on? Because he understands intuitively that there is a natural kind of pace and cycle to things. So deep down, I knew that. And I was happy to keep going, keep trying, and also happy to change and evolve and try different things.
Yeah.
And if that's not working, okay, try a few times, and how can I improve it? How can I change it?
I think there's something really interesting about the persistence, about keeping going and changing and adapting but keep moving forward. And like you said, it could be really easy to just give up, to go, it didn't work, nobody turned up, give up. Without recognizing, without that persistence, no one's going to get to know that you're going to be there once a month or wherever it was, that's part of the process to be able to dial into working with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And people watch.
Yes.
People like to people watch. Who doesn't like to, you know, sit in a Parisian cafe and kind of watch? So I think often when there's a new event, somebody that's, you know, unheard of, or people will say, oh, there's an event there. And they might not necessarily go or be able to go that first time or the second time, but then they become aware of it.
Yeah.
And then because you've held it, even if there's one person, you've done it, you've got that social that one person's had an amazing time that you can then build on. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Oh, I missed out last time. I'm going to go this time. So it is getting through enough of those early attempts, I guess.
Yeah.
Depends on the nature of the event. So something like the Empower Awards, that came late, you know, that evolved because there's no way I could have run an event of that scale, of that magnitude, and have it sell out in the way it did in the first year, right at the beginning of my journey.
Because you've got to build your following, you've got to build your people, you've got to build that network that's going to join those events, and they're not going to necessarily do that at the beginning as they're getting to know you.
Exactly.
Nice. And so I suppose what I remember next in this kind of journey is that you did a talk at one of our Animus summits. So every couple of years we have a summit where we get coaches together to kind of celebrate coaching and talk about different ideas. I remember you attended one of those to be one of our keynote speakers.
Yeah, and you worked with me.
I
asked you to help me before then as my speaker coach because I was terrified, terrified. Really excited at the opportunity and, you know, so grateful to Nick for believing me in me at that stage more than I believed in myself as a speaker, because I'd spent my entire adult life as a speaker phobe, and it was something I wanted to smash. And I'd been doing Toastmasters, and I made a commitment to myself: any speaking opportunity that comes along, I'll say yes. So I'd been doing that for a while. But yeah, I mean, everything to do with Animus from day one, you know, this word of a journey, it's been such a journey. Animus training in itself is a journey. What you then go on to do, whether it's through events and through speaking, is such a transformational journey in itself. We talk about, you know, we train in coaching in order to have these skills and these abilities to work with our clients in transformational ways. But just doing the Animus training and being part of that, you can't come out the same person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's something about when you're authentically coaching, you coach yourself as well. So when you're working with your client in those coaching sessions, it's also working on you, and you go through changes and adaptions and transformations of your own.
Absolutely. And that speaking opportunity, the summit, is a fantastic example of that. And I think that particular talk came at a really pivotal moment in my life. Where there'd been a lot of learning and preparation, and you know, I was working on my coaching business a lot, I was working on my events a lot, I was working on my speaking a lot, and speaking at that summit was the biggest audience that I'd spoken to at that point. And I'd been invited along to share, you know, how was I doing what I was doing with my coaching and creating the success I'd already created by that stage. So you begin to think really deeply about, okay, so what is key here, and what is it that underpins my success? And how can I explain that in a way that's really meaningful to coaches?
Yeah.
And I remember explaining, you know, there are three essential ingredients in my mind. There's the IQ, the business IQ. We all need it. And the coaching training, Animus gives us that. The EQ, the whole emotional intelligence. And as coaches, we've got this advantage when it comes to marketing. Marketing is all about having that empathy for our client, meeting them where they're at, understanding them, working with them to problem solve. So we've got a head start there. And then what I call AQ, that whole authenticity piece and, and walking your talk. And giving that talk was, preparing that talk came at a time in my life when there were a lot of personal changes going on, in a way that they, those changes were important if I was going to really be able to live my life authentically in the family arena. So, I remember that talk. And I think between that talk and doing the TEDx was still another, I don't know, two years. So it was a long time ago, but it was that, that talk felt as significant as doing a TEDx talk 2 years later. It was a really important pivotal point in my journey.
And I love this, this idea that, you know, those steps that we take along the way. So from events that have one person and your mum, to then doing a talk to, I don't know, 100 coaches, then going on to do your TEDx talk. And it's just that kind of incremental steps and growing and building of that business and, you know, needing or having that desire to be authentic in what you were doing to make it happen, as opposed to having this pretense about business and personal life and family life, but actually going, I want to be authentic in all of that.
I do believe that it's perhaps not the same with every industry, but in the coaching industry, to truly succeed in a sustainable way, authenticity, I think, is key. You've got to be real. I think, you know, we in the digital world we live in, there is a lot of smoke and mirrors, the filtered version of life. Coaching is an unregulated industry to this day, and sadly, you know, I talk to a lot of people who have been burnt and not had such a positive experience of coaching. And I think as time goes on, those coaches who continue to be massively successful and grow and will be the ones that really understand and live that value of being authentic.
I think so too. I think a lot of the coaches that are part of the, you know, the quick fixes and the you know, doing coaching to make money as opposed to it being about investing in people, I think they'll start to fall away, because it's hard to sustain pretending for a long time, and people start to notice that pretense as opposed to see the real you that's showing up in all the different spaces.
And that can, it must be exhausting. You're an actor, you know. Method acting. Somebody else full time. How would that be?
It's tiring stuff.
Acting is hard work, right?
Totally. And so I'm just curious about, how did you go about getting that TEDx talk?
Just through network and connections. So hearing that the event was going to be organized and being invited to submit my application. So all TEDx talks have a curator, and you have to kind of put in an application. So a 2-minute video and then a written submission. You know, why you want to do the TEDx talk. Most TEDx talks have a theme. So what your theme is, and they want to understand, would it be aligned with their theme? So I did an application. We were told there were about 120 around 120 applications went in, and there were 10 speaker spots, and it was in Crete, on the island of Crete. That's amazing.
Lovely. So that's interesting that you know, you're invited to do that. So that means that people would have seen you talking or been at networking events that you've been around, to enable your name to be put forward. So there's something really important there about, you know, things, we may feel like nothing is happening when we're at those events and we're talking to people, and can feel like there's lots of dead ends, but you never know what that little spark's going to be, or who's going to have a conversation with somebody else that leads to something else.
Yeah, absolutely. The image that comes to my mind is, even though I'm a marketing strategist, I didn't have this image until actually being in it. It's a bit like being a sculptor. So you've got this piece of rock, right, that just looks like a piece of rock. But within it, you know, you're inside your personal brand, who you are, your essence, what you're here to do, what drives you, what motivates you. It's all in there, but nobody can see it. And for me, it's all those little things, seemingly minuscule things we do on a daily basis. It's like one more chip, chip. And those chips in themselves, taken in isolation, don't reveal that much, but it's over time.
Yeah.
And it's as that begins to form, and then that is your personal brand. And then people begin to see it. They begin to get you. And it's just built up over time.
Yeah.
And it's always been there, and we know who we are, but it just keeps chipping away.
I'm not sure we always do know who we
are.
I think sometimes it's those experiences that chip away, that uncover who we are.
True.
And we go, oh, wow, this is who I am, and this is what I do. And I think sometimes it can surprise us. But I absolutely believe that you're constantly chipping away at that piece of rock, that piece of stone to create that sculpture of you.
To reveal. It's kind of like revealing and shaping at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Because it's there. So we're just kind of taking the stone away to show what's there. But in the process of taking it away, we're also creating or modifying what's there. Nice. And so there's TEDx talks that you do or have done, and then there's books.
It sounds really bizarre, right? So if somebody had said 8 years ago, you'll be sitting talking to Robert about, you know, doing these national events, going from this to this in events, going from this to this in your coaching business, going from this to this in, you know, becoming a published author, I'd be like, yeah, right. It feels a bit surreal. And it's easy in an interview like this for it to come across as, in an easy kind of not flippant way, I don't mean that, but just go, oh yes, well I did the TEDx talk, and then I did this, and then I did that, and make it all sound how can I put, like, taken for granted, or that it's all happened overnight. And I think that's the incredible thing, is the journey that sat behind all of that. So the book, for example, never in a million years did I think I'd become a published author. I didn't, you know, we work with limiting beliefs, don't we? And that was certainly one of mine, that I wasn't a good writer. And actually, it wasn't a limiting belief. It's true. I wasn't a good writer at the time, because I'd worked in the corporate world, and that kind of crushed, you know, as a business consultant, you have to take something that's complex and turn it into a model or a framework or a synthesized report. Nobody wants, you know, stories.
Yeah.
Don't want storytelling.
Yeah. What's really interesting is now they do. So what's really interesting, that now when I look at people that talk about marketing and about ideas, they want the story of that. They want us to take us on a journey. Whereas then it was like, I just want the idea in 4 bullet points.
Yeah, bullet points. You know, create me a PowerPoint slide or something. So that's really changed. But when I left the corporate world, I think that had kind of put a barrier on that creativity. I didn't consider myself creative, and I didn't consider myself a good writer. However, because I felt so passionately about these messages and insights and inspiration I wanted to share with my audience of mums in business, this, you know, at the moment, they are coming across or finding or being sold pieces of the jigsaw puzzle and it's not helping them. It's like, oh, here's a magic bullet and it's only one piece. And I wanted to write a book or share the message to give them that overview so that they could understand the big picture, which is really empowering. And I understood that, you know, yes, I'm doing this one-to-one and it's amazing and I'm making a great living. But if I want to help more people, I'm going to have to look at, explore some other channels. And how can I get this message out there to more people? Well, write a book is one. So the wonderful thing is when you open your mind up to something and then the universe will deliver and, you know, Facebook posts start to pop up and as did for me. So I saw this Facebook post come up. My publisher once a quarter runs a business book proposal challenge. So you take part and for 10 days, they teach you how to write your business book proposal in an industry standard template. So whether you self-publish or you then try and go and find a publisher, you've got your proposal document, which is like a plan, really. And I love planning. So I was like, right, that's up my street. I'm going to start with the book plan and then see what happens. And I did the business book proposal. I think about 40 or 50 of us took part. And with each cohort, the publisher selects the best book proposal and offers them a book publishing deal. Well, I didn't get it on the first one. I wasn't expecting to, but I had my plan, right? So I was really pleased. So I went away. I was like, right, great. I'm going to start writing the book. And I was blocked. I just couldn't write it. And the bits and pieces that did come out, I thought, oh, actually, I think there might be two books here. So 3 months later, still struggling, I went back and did the book proposal challenge again for the second book to kind of have a plan for these two different books. And that's when I won the book publishing deal off the back of the second one.
Nice.
And that became The Invisible Revolution.
Lovely, lovely.
Out now on Amazon and Kindle, just saying.
So that's something wonderful there about, you know, you went in, you tried, you did the plan, you realized that you hadn't had that movement forward in terms of writing it on your own, as it were. But you went back again and redid it. And from that, something came from it. So that's that perseverance just kind of feels like it's part of your DNA.
Yeah, there's a bit of that going on, isn't there, really? And even so, if there's anybody else that is aspiring to write a book, even once I had that second plan, and then I found out on the Friday I got the publishing deal, and that was massive celebrations. Graham and I went into Chester and we drank champagne all weekend, and I was just like buzzing all weekend. Then I woke up on Monday and I was like, I better not swear, you know. Now I've got to actually write the thing. It's contractual, you know. You sign on a dotted line and you are committing to handing over your manuscript by a certain date. And I almost gave the punchline then, I'll save that. Again, 3 months later, I still hadn't properly started writing. I had that writer's block. Everything I wrote, I ended up, you know, editing. And so to anybody out there who's just trying to write a book or wants to write a book, thinks they're not a great writer, I mean, it's all about just getting reconnected to your creativity and finding your way. There is no one way for an author to, you know, what time of the day, when are you feeling most creative? What's the, do you write with a pen on paper? Do you type it in a tool like Scrivener or in a Word document? There's all these, and it's about finding your way, very similar to what I say about business, really. And I did do one thing, which was Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way, which is really good with her Morning Pages, which is the form of free writing. That to me was the tool that really just helped me find my writing flow.
Nice.
And it turns out, this is the nice end to the story, my publisher Alison Jones, who's the founder of Practical Inspirational Publishing. She's been in publishing, I can't remember how many years. Sorry, Alison, if I make you sound older, but 20-something, a good 20-something. She said, in the 20-something years I've been working with authors, she said, I think you're the first, she said, in fact, you are the first author to have handed in your manuscript ahead. I think I was like 2 months or something.
Wow.
Like that. Ahead of the publishing deadline. So that's awesome for somebody who can't Brilliant. Write.
Yeah, that's amazing. Amazing. Look, Nicola, I could talk to you forever about your story and your journey and the things that you're doing. But could you just tell us what's the next thing for you and where we can find you?
Ooh, next thing. So, I mean, we're coming into awards season with Nice. The annual awards. That's a big thing. There's definitely a book too inside me. I think it's a bit like having children. You go through the pain of childbirth once and then they say you forget. So there's definitely a book too in there somewhere.
Okay.
This one will be a slightly different audience. I think, you know, everything I live and breathe is around my mission of empowering 1 million mums in business, and Empower is huge and pivotal. Book two, I see so many other coaches struggling with the marketing piece. Often, if like myself, we're introverts, we're an empath, we find it difficult energetically to find our way of putting ourselves out there. So I believe in the power of coaching to change the world. And I would love for book two to be able to help more coaches crack that.
Brilliant.
That marketing
awesome.
Piece.
And if you just share with us where we can find you online.
Yeah. So if you're a mum in business, mum coach, come find me at empower.global. That's that website. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn, which is a good one if you're a corporate and you want to come and say hello. And there's also growyourcoachingbusiness.co.uk for anyone who's, you know, parent, non-parent, Annamite, potential Annamite. I've spoken to a lot of people who are looking for coaching training and perhaps wondering, if they're looking at Animas interviews at the moment, thinking, is Animas for me? Is it not for me? I wish I could go back and do it all again. And I'm always very happy for people to reach out to me and I can share just how amazing, not just the quality of Animas training is and the really powerful tools that it gives us as a coach, but also that experience of the people that you meet in the community, the journey that you go on that is literally life-changing, certainly has been for me.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
If you'd like to watch these episodes as well as listen, you can find the video interviews on our YouTube channel and website now. Thanks for tuning in to Coaching Uncaged. Join us again for more captivating conversations, exploring the art of coaching.